नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 7 टेक्स 11 थ्रू 14 इति उक्तस्ताम विहायेन्द्रो देवर्षेर्मानयम् वचः अनंत प्रिय भक्त्यायिनाम् परिक्रम्य दिवं ययो इति उक्तस्ताम विहायेन्द्रो देवर्षेर्मानयन् वचः अनंत प्रिय भक्तैनाम् परिक्रम्य दिवं ययो Would you like to try? Okay. Iti, thus, uktaha, addressed, tam, her. Who's her? Who's the she here? Yeah, kayad. Vihaya, releasing. Indraha, the king of heaven. Devarishe, of the saint Narada Muni. Manayan, honoring. Vachaha, the words. Anantapriya, for one who is very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhaktya, by devotion. Enam, this woman. Parikramya, circumambulating. Divam, to the heavenly planets. Yayo, returned. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When the great saint Narada Muni had thus spoken, King Indra, being respectful to Narada's words, immediately released my mother. Because of my being a devotee of the Lord, all the demigods circumambulated her. Then they returned to their celestial kingdom. Report. Although King Indra and the other demigods are all exalted personalities, they were so obedient to Narada Muni that King Indra immediately accepted Narada Muni's words concerning Prahlad Maharaj. This is called understanding by the parampara system. Indra and the demigods did not know that a great devotee was in the womb of Kayadhu, wife of Hiranyakashipu, but they accepted the authoritative statements of Narada Muni and immediately offered their respects to the devotee by circumambulating the woman in whose womb he was living. To understand God and the devotee by the parampara system is the process of knowledge. There is no need to speculate about God and his devotee. One should accept the statements of a bona fide devotee and thus try to understand. Text 12. Prahlad Maharaj continued, "The great saint Narada Muni brought my mother to his ashram and assured her of all protection, saying, 'My dear child, please remain at my ashram until the arrival of your husband.' After accepting the instructions of Devarshi Narada, my mother stayed in his care without fear from any direction as long as my father, the king of the Daityas, had not become free from his severe austerities. My mother, being pregnant, desired the safety of her embryo and desired to give birth after her husband's arrival. Thus, she stayed at Narada Muni's ashram, where she rendered service unto Narada Muni with great devotion." Purport. It is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 9.19.17, "Matra svasra duhitra va na vivikshtano bhavet balavan indriya gramo vidvamsam apikarshati." One should not remain in a secluded place with a woman, even one's mother, sister, or daughter. Nonetheless, although one is strictly prohibited from staying with a woman in a secluded place, Narada Muni gave shelter to Prahlad Maharaj's young mother, who rendered service to him with great devotion and faith. Does this mean that Narada Muni transgressed the Vedic injunctions? Certainly he did not. Such injunctions are intended for mundane creatures, but Narada Muni is transcendental to mundane categories. Narada Muni is a great saint and is transcendentally situated. Therefore, although he was a young man, he could give shelter to a young woman and accept her service. Haridas Thakur also spoke with a young woman, a prostitute, in the dead of night, but the woman could not deviate his mind. Instead, she became a Vaishnavi, a pure devotee, by the benediction of Haridas Thakur. Ordinary persons, however, should not imitate such highly elevated devotees. Ordinary persons must strictly observe the rules and regulations by staying aloof from the association of women. No one should imitate Narada Muni or Haridas Thakur. It is said, "Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vignena Bhujiya." If a man is very advanced in learning, he cannot understand the behavior of a Vaishnava. Even if a man is very advanced in learning, he cannot understand the behavior of a Vaishnava. Anyone can take shelter of a pure Vaishnava without fear. Therefore, in the previous verses, it has been distinctly said, "Devarshir antike sakuto bhaya." Kayadu, the mother of Prahlad Maharaj, stayed under the protection of Narada Muni without fear from any direction. Similarly, Narada Muni, in his transcendental position, stayed with the young woman without fear of deviation. Narada Muni, Haridas Thakur, and similar acharyas, especially empowered to broadcast the glories of the Lord, cannot be brought down to the material platform. Therefore, one is strictly forbidden to think that the acharya is an ordinary human being. Gurusu Naramatihi. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas Adi Gora Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. I see some faces missing, but we'll find out later. Text 11 talks about the parampara system. In English, Prabhupada called it disciplic succession. Disciplic means of disciples or students, and succession means coming one after the other. In Sanskrit, the word parampara means one after another. So in that sense, it makes sense that we call it disciplic succession. And Prabhupada's highlighting the point that although the demigods are very powerful, they have great knowledge, they accepted Narada Muni's statements as authoritative. Narada said, they accepted. They did not argue with him. Where'd you get this from? Who told you? Are you sure? What if someone messed with your mind and gave you wrong information? Narada said, they accepted. And they accepted with their full heart, because you see the change in behavior. When heart changes, behavior changes. Sometimes behavior changes without the heart changing. Right? It's possible. So let's discuss what's the difference between behavior that changes because the heart has changed and behavior that has changed without the heart changing. What is the difference? What are some of the weaknesses or differences? One is a putting on a show. Okay, very good. Second? What do you think, Bhakti Dan? Yeah, I mean, heart's not changed, but behavior seems to change. No. Lack of sincerity, joy, an ulterior motive, Mikey. Fear or ulterior motive. Any input? Yes. Yeah. If the standard is on the basis of external behaviors, it's easier to match. And if the internal, it's difficult to assess. Another is, externals come up to the level of obedience. Internals is where I'm doing because there is affection. Anyone can be obedient depending on what they want from it. If you go to the armed forces and they say, do it, yes sir, you have to do it, you can't say no. Another one is, without the heart changing, only behaviors, when they change, they're not sustainable. After some time, we'll find that things fall back to the old patterns. So when we take up Krishna consciousness, when the words of Srila Prabhupada enter our heart properly, then the change that comes in our lifestyle, that is sustainable. You can carry it for the rest of our lives. Sometimes we take up Krishna consciousness with some excitement, or as they say, mentally accepted Krishna consciousness, and then when our attachments are touched, we go back to old patterns. Or after the configuration of things change, our interest changes, because it's on the basis of what we say, manodharma. I like, I don't like. Because if we just accept Krishna consciousness as, oh, I like this, then there will be a time when we might not like it anymore. So we're looking for what we call a transformation of heart. Of course, behaviors help strengthen the transformation, no doubt. But that's only when we genuinely want transformation. Otherwise, in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, Krishna says, a person whose senses are externally controlled, but the mind is roaming with all sorts of desires is considered to be a pretender. Mithyachara sa uchyate. So we might say, oh, am I a pretender? Because my heart is not fully developed in love for Krishna, but I'm doing the things. Well, it depends then where the heart is. If the heart is that I'm genuinely wanting, I'm sincerely, he said in absence of sincerity, I'm sincerely wanting to develop my heart or transform my heart, then one is not a pretender, one is a practitioner. But if I do the externals, but internally I'm consciously feeding something else, then I'm a pretender. If I'm trying to overcome, I'm a practitioner. If I don't give squat about overcoming whatever is the difficulty or the distractions in the mind, then I tend to be a pretender. In the first case, where is a practitioner, there is hope of transformation. In the latter, it won't sustain. Like, how long can you put on an act? We were exploring for Prahlad to go to the Mayapur Gurukula at one point in time. And their system is that they will accept the child for 3 weeks, then they will assess. Then they will do for 3 months, and then they will assess. Then they will do for a whole year and assess. After that, they confirm the admission. Because the point is, the child can put on a show for 3 weeks. Anyone can do it. You know, spring out of bed, show up for Mangalarati, you know, chant all the prayers, do this and do that. 3 weeks, you can easily do it. After that, they want to know, is this just a show or is it something more genuine? So they try for 3 months. And in 3 months, you see the same enthusiasm. Then they try for the whole year to see if it is somewhere down in the core, it has settled that this is how life will be. And so Krishna consciousness, the practice of Krishna consciousness is meant to come from that core. It's called spontaneous. And we are trying to develop that from external practices. So I shouldn't say external, but by practice of rules and regulations, so that that internal core is awakened. That it is not a show anymore. It is not a drag anymore. Oh, I have to wake up. Oh, I have to do this. It's not like that anymore. We operate on a different set of what we say inspiration. Okay. So, in terms of parampara, and we see the demigods, they heard from Narada Muni, and instead of waiting to kill the child, they circumambulated Kayadu. By the way, Kayadu and Indra are related to each other. She is his sister-in-law in one sense. Not one sense, yeah? So, because their grandfather is Kashyapa Muni. Hiranyakashipu was born to Diti, and Indra was born to Aditi. So they are half-brothers, is that what it's called? Half-brothers? Step-brothers, cousins, whatever the term is. Half-brothers or something, right? Same father, different mother. Half-brothers. So she is his sister-in-law. And Prahlad is his nephew in that sense. And is waiting to kill this child. But as soon as Narada Muni spoke, they circumambulated. So we hear this word parampara. I'd like us to get a better sense of, when we say parampara, what are some advantages, okay, of hearing in disciplic succession? What do you think? What are some advantages? Yeah, bona fide Brahma. Knowledge is pure. How so? Okay, knowledge is pure because it has been transparently handed down. Joy, what were you going to say? It is free of mental concoction. Okay, very good. So where is the source? Krishna. Okay, what else? What else is the advantage? Huh? Connects us to Krishna. Very good. So let's say someone tries to change something that's rooted in Shastra. What happens? Yeah. Let's say you or I in the parampara, we decide we want to change something. Make it more modern because it's very old. I am in the parampara. I come to this temple. I read the same books. I speak it a little differently. Rejected by who? I have many followers, let's say. There's something in parampara. How do you know? How do we know we are in parampara? Because we're told, here's the line. In the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, there's a line of 32, now 33, whoever is our spiritual master. And we are 34, ready. And I have followers. How do I know that the teachings are in parampara? I think I am. There is something by which you can sense if this is or not. Gokulananda, you want to help us? It should coincide with what Krishna says. Back to Radha Krishna Prabhu's point, the connection with Krishna won't happen. What will happen is, although this is why so many people who speak from the Bhagavad Gita, they're talking Krishna's words. But we'll notice that Krishna is systematically out of the picture. Or the followers, after whoever is the one who's adjusting the teachings, will not feel a connection with Krishna. This is something, feeling a connection with Krishna means slowly and slowly the sense of centering things and activities around Krishna will start diluting. This is where Krishna is saying yoga nashta parantapa. Yoga nashta means connection is broken. If we are hearing in disciplic succession, our connection with Krishna is obvious. Our considerations would be about pleasing Krishna. As soon as the connection is broken, our considerations of pleasing Krishna will start getting clouded. Yes, Acharya. Yes, and that is why it requires an expert to detect it. One may not. One may genuinely think, I am. And therefore Krishna says, Maya Tedya Yoga Purokta Puratanaha. I am re-establishing it again. I am connecting it back. And so each one of us has that responsibility. Because we are now aspiring to be part of this disciplic succession. We meet people and we have to be making sure that for them to feel connected with the disciplic succession, the first important thing is, I'm myself connected to the disciplic succession. Because if I'm not connected, others who are connected to me don't have anything flowing. The example we've heard Prabhupada say many times, that there is a little electric outlet, and when I connect my device, Mukunda charges his phone in the mornings. When he connects it, he has electricity. There's a little little icon that says it's charging, which means that that phone is connected to the powerhouse, the where electricity is being generated. But even if it looks like a socket and there's no wire behind it, I connect it. This is the thing. And what is the evidence of connection with Krishna? Is given in the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye. That Lord Brahma, he received Tene in his heart. In him or by him, by Vishnu, Tene Hridaya, in his heart, Brahma. This Brahma in that first verse is not Lord Brahma. It means the Vedic knowledge. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye. The original teacher is Lord Brahma. In his heart, it was revealed. If we are connected to the parampara, in our heart, the conclusion of the Vedic knowledge about devotional service will awaken. And what awakens, our conclusion will be very similar to what Lord Brahma's realizations are. So back to Acharya's point, nice point, that whatever is our realization, when we hold it in the light of or in comparison to the realizations of Narada Muni and Brahma and Vyasadeva, it should be consistent. Otherwise, what gets revealed is a whole different realization. That is how we check for consistency. Now, it doesn't mean we cannot have varieties of realization. The Siddhanta, the conclusion must be consistent. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye. So it has certain characteristics. And the characteristics are that they follow the standard Vedic conclusions of Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojana. Otherwise, a person's sense of Sambandha Gyan will be distorted, which means Krishna is not in the center of the picture. Their Abhideya will get distorted. Instead of the mainstay practices, other practices will get involved. And our movement has seen that history, where there's deviation. And the prayojana, the fruit, that is attraction to Krishna in devotional service or love for Krishna, doesn't awaken. Other things awaken. A socialist message, an altruistic message, a humanitarian message. Those are the prayojana. Oh, that's what we should be doing. And so it is described that we need disciplic succession, which means every guru, by nature of being in a disciplic succession, every guru is a student. There is no guru in any of the disciplic successions who's not a student or a disciple himself. If there is a guru who says, I'm not a disciple, that's the first indicator. Every guru, if you watch carefully, every guru is a disciple. Including our founder Acharya, he always considered himself clearly the disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And each, including Lord Brahma, who is the most intelligent being in all of creation, is a disciple of Krishna. And Krishna himself, to establish the importance of accepting a guru, takes teachings from Sandipani Muni. Even Lord Chaitanya took initiation from Ishwarpuri. So every guru has to be a disciple. And in due course of time, every disciple, it's an order and a service to be a teacher. And as while acting as teacher, one is still a student. You cannot say, now I am guru, I don't need to learn from anyone. Then we violate parampara. Are there any other advantages? Are there any disadvantages of being in a parampara? It just stops creativity. It stifles creativity. I can't creatively speak different conclusions. It's very stifling. I have to say the same things that Lord Brahma said. 32 people ahead of me have said it, and I have to repeat the same thing. What about creativity? Someone had their hand up. What is any disadvantage of being in a parampara? What do you think? Jitendra Prabhu? Lord Brahma was Hiranyakashipu's spiritual master. Is Hiranyakashipu's grandfather, or great-grandfather. Hiranyakashipu's spiritual master was Shukracharya. He seemed to cooperate with parampara. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. He did seem to cooperate. He did not. Who? Lord Brahma? Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu did not seem to cooperate. Yeah. That's the whole problem.
Understanding.
Yes, Acharya. Right.
One's knowledge they receive in their disciplic succession may vary in certain aspects from a different sampradaya, which may create some conflict.
The knowledge or the specifics of one parampara may differ with another parampara, which may create some, you know, rough edges. Very good point.
It leaves the possibility of blind following if someone who doesn't represent the parampara gets initiated and says, yes, I'm the next in line, so you have to listen to me, pretty much.
So let's take that point further. Does initiation confirm the right to be part of parampara?
Well, I can say, at least in our line, I know it's more of a shiksha, disciplic succession, so I guess it depends on what line.
So initiation doesn't necessarily mean fire yajna. Yeah. It also means giving knowledge. It's part of diksha. But does that confirm to be part of disciplic succession?
I guess you could say externally it may, but like on the more substantial level, it may not mean anything until one fully
surrenders. So what's at the substantial level?
Accepting it into your heart.
Okay. Any further refinement of it? When one gets initiated, one becomes eligible and qualified to represent the parampara in a formal way. Either diksha, diksha or siksha, either way. That is still initiation in the purer sense, if you will. But that doesn't necessarily give the person the right or the full qualification to be. They may be eligible, but there is something else that needs to happen. And Krishna speaks about it as to why Arjuna is the candidate. Huh? Yeah. Bhaktosi me sakha cha iti rahasyam hi etad uttamam. I am speaking to you because you are my friend and devotee. That means the connection of the heart with the particular person, the immediate person in the disciplic succession, is very critical. For example, I cannot say, I like Narada Muni. He should be my guru. I accept Narada as my guru. I can't say, I like Bhaktivinoda Thakur very much. He should be my guru. My connection to the disciplic succession is with the immediate person in the disciplic succession. I have inspiration, I can take inspiration from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Sharanarada Muni, any of the acharyas in the disciplic circle, great. But my connection to them is through this person, at the immediate person in the line. So the heart needs to be connected. Heart connected means connected in faith. What is that verse from Shvetashvatara Upanishad? That one who has implicit faith in one's spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yasya deve para bhakti, yatha deve tatha guru. One who has implicit faith in Guru and Krishna, something happens. Tasya ete hi prakashante mahat, tasya ete hi katitha hi arthan. All the meanings and conclusions of the Vedic literature are revealed in the person's heart. You were going to say something.
You mentioned that initiation is the gives one the qualification,
eligibility
to receive and represent the disciplic succession. But as far as representing the disciplic succession, seems like it might say a stretch to say that a newly initiated devotee has the qualification to represent the entire disciplic succession of our Paramahamsa Acharyas, but they might need to actually realize what the Parampara is giving to be able to represent it.
So let's take our example. We go out and we talk about our disciplic succession, and people are connected to the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya through us as whoever we are. Now, it doesn't mean that we have to have the same realization as a Paramahamsa yet. It means that to the degree we are connected to the Parampara, to that degree they are connected. So from a big reservoir of water, you can open a dam and it can come in a deluge, or you can open a small faucet and you may get a few drops. But that one drop is of the same quality of the deluge. It doesn't change. Now, we become eligible, it does not mean we can give them full realization of Krishna, but we can give whatever we know. So it does, greatness of a Parampara. And Prabhupada, it's, I think, spoken once, I'm paraphrasing, I may be imperfect, but if I speak the words of a perfect person, then my speech is perfect. So others can only realize Krishna to the degree that we have. So if we have sincerity in our heart, we have some genuine connection with the Parampara in our heart, others who are connected to us have the potential of that connection. If I myself am not connected, and that was the way the heart's not changed, then although I may have a lot of people hearing from me and inspired, the connection may not be sustained over time. And the Parampara is mobile. It moves. It moves in the sense that every individual in the Parampara is developing in their realization of Krishna. So it's not a 0-1. I have no connection and I have full connection with Krishna. But it is something that develops. Okay. Anything else? Mikey? Yeah, the question is fine.
So, Plod was born from an Asura line of, you know, a family. Mm-hmm. Does this make him, like, technically an Asura, but he's like a devotee Asura? Could you say that?
A devotee Asura.
Or is he more of a devotee? Is he Asura?
That's an oxymoron, devotee Asura.
The reason I ask is I met someone on book distribution, and he was saying, yes, I follow Asura. And he's like from Iraq or something, and they say that basically the Asuras are the Devatas and the Asuras are the demons.
That's all right.
So I was thinking basically, okay, well, maybe these words just particularly mean like aligned families and maybe they're like against each other.
Sura and Asura?
Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking that maybe Okay. They can still be devotees in asura families, right?
We have...
Yeah. So, like, you could say Prahlad's an asura, but he's a devotee.
Okay. So, let's clarify that a little bit. Yeah. We don't say Prahlad is an asura. Sura and asura are categories of divisions of mentality. Suras are those who live by Vedic injunctions. And asuras are those who don't necessarily live by those Vedic injunctions. They create injunctions according to materialistic desires. So they may be very good looking, very educated. Still, if they don't subscribe to Vedic injunctions, that's asuric mentality.
Right.
Within sura, their dependence is on Krishna. That is what a sura means. And asura is, they are dependent on their own mind and their own abilities. It's a categorization of mentalities. That's one. There is another category that's described as Adityas and Daityas,
yeah,
as we hear in this section. So Daityas means those who are born from Diti. And Adityas is those who are born from Aditi. These are sisters, Aditi and Diti. So it's just a nomenclature given a seminal connection to the mother. That's all it means. Now, whether one is a devotee or not depends upon the mentality, not the birth necessarily. Birth gives the proper environment or improper environment. But an individual can be a devotee or not. So even in the family of very qualified persons and devotees, there can be someone born who doesn't have devotional mentality. And in the family of materialistic, asuric personalities, there can be a genuine devotee. And what determines that is association. What determines that is the samskara, the past impressions. So in Bhagavatam, sometimes we hear the word Prahlad is asura. In that sense, we should understand the reference is only to the seminal line, not to the mentality. Later, Prahlad is going to speak about, oh, I am an asura. He's speaking humbly about himself. But you hear Narada Muni glorifying, oh, this is a Mahabhagavata. The demigods are circumambulating Kayadu because Prahlad is there. And Narada is saying, this is a Mahabhagavata. I'll refer you back to the 8th chapter in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says that a yogi, if he doesn't finish the conclusion of his path in that life, then he has an opportunity in the next life. Right? So for a devotee who's not, the yogi who's not very mature yet, but cannot finish, then he gets birth in Suchinam Srimatam Gehe, in the family of aristocrats, or very rich people, or in the family of a Brahmin. And if a yogi who's very mature but does not complete, then he gets birth in the family of devotees. Now, someone who's born in the family of devotees, or Brahmin, or aristocrats, it doesn't mean that they will become devotees. It only means that they have all the opportunity to become devotees, to carry on from there. Eligible, but doesn't confirm it. And another one is, which connects back to the parampara teaching, is that this connection to parampara is not a one-time thing. I was connected 6 years ago, the connection must be going on. It's a day-to-day, moment-to-moment connection with the parampara. The moment our consciousness separates from Krishna, in those moments we are not connected to the parampara, although we are in the general environment. And when our consciousness is connected to Krishna, we're connected to the parampara. So Mukunda's phone and the charger, because he has a charger, and on this end it fits the device properly, and on this end it fits the socket properly, he is eligible to draw electricity. But if he doesn't connect it, I'm not talking about you personally, but if he doesn't connect it, there's no charge. And when you're disconnected, what happens to the battery? It discharges. Slowly and slowly and slowly it discharges. We may think, oh, the phone's not connected, but still I'm able to make a phone call. All the functions in the phone are working. Yes, but it is discharging. And if you don't connect again, finished. That's why it's not sustainable. The idea is to keep connected. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for class. So my question is about jumping to conclusions, because when you first read this...
The mics are very loud, so I'm not able to hear. Say it again.
My question is related to jumping to conclusions.
Jumping to conclusions.
Yeah, so when you first read this verse, before you even read Prabhupada's reports, I was thinking, you know, Narada Muni, he's going in the ashram, a sannyasi alone, you know, with the beautiful woman, you know, won't people speculate? And so you're making a point that... one who's in the disciple succession is supposed to be of a certain character or behavior, and we can see that. At the same time, we see so many examples like Lord Shiva giving a Bhagavatam class with Parvati on his lap, or Bhrigu Muni. I'll bring this example up, and maybe you could give us some points about it, because I was just recently reading Chaitanya Bhagavat of the pastime Bhrigu Muni, of course, where it says in chapter 9 of the last part, Anshakant, that the Lord entered Bhrigu Muni's body and kind of made him disrespect his superiors, because Bhrigu Muni, of course, would never think about disrespecting his superiors. So my question is, how do we know, you know, of course, if the Lord could do that to Bhrigu Muni, he could do that to any of us. So how do we, in practical experience, not necessarily jump to conclusions, like maybe a devotee is not really arrogant, they're simulating arrogance because the Lord inspired that. So how do we prevent this mentality to jump to conclusions? Because when I read this verse, I was like, oh, Narada Muni, you know. You know, I thought it was transgressing the Vedic injunctions.
Well, the mode of passion is characterized by jumping to conclusions, because one wants the result immediately. And the mode of goodness is characterized by contemplation. Now, of course, it doesn't mean if you ask someone, can you please turn on the mic? I have to contemplate. Is it the right thing to do? That's not mode of goodness. Contemplation in the right context. So the reason someone jumps to conclusion, let's analyze that a little bit, is because something's going on. They feel attacked, misunderstood, or whatever the range of things. And when you come to a conclusion quickly, or you jump to a conclusion, it is on the basis of the picture that the mind has drawn, which may be very, very different from reality. And as a practicing devotee, our whole search is for the truth, to whatever degree of truth. And so one of the elements of it is, I don't only rely on my truth, I rely on other, even if it is relative truths, I'm trying to rely on a broader picture. And I hold that broader picture in the light of conclusions that our disciplic succession has given. And that's how I assess do I have the right picture? So let's say I even jump to the conclusion. In jumping, I should, as a devotee, also hold equally sacred the fact that I may have a wrong picture here. That keeps the door open versus, I saw it, I know it, it's the absolute truth here. Then what happens is we continue living in that imagination. And someday that bubble will burst and Krishna will poke that bubble and burst it for us. Because the idea is to go beyond illusion. We are already in illusion and then we create an illusion within that illusion. And so Krishna will burst it somehow or the other. That's up to him. He's the expert. He can burst it any way he likes. Okay, any other? All right. Anything from the ladies' side? Okay. Yeah, Radha Krishna Prabhu. Yeah, he already paid his full respects. Mikey is ready to leave.
Prabhu, you mentioned a while back that, like in the class, about the practice versus insincerity. You know, that by the time that we are, our heart is not there, but we are acting as if our heart is there, depending on our consciousness, which side of us we feed. You know, it's like that makes the difference between insincerity and practice. But when I look at myself, Prabhu, I see that both sides are there. You know, so it's like the tendency for profit and adoration is always there, but I want Krishna, right? So it's not, I don't see it in myself like black and white, you know. Mostly it's black, but there is some glimpses of white. Can you explain further on that?
See, for the moment, in physics we have scalars and vectors. Scalar is just the entity without direction, let's say. So what's important is, where's our heart directed to? That's important. When we stand in front of Krishna, we know that, I know, I'm speaking for myself, it's full of black stuff. Full of black stuff. In fact, the more I dig, the blacker it gets or something, you know. But what's necessary is, do I have the intention of moving in the direction of Krishna? That's very necessary. And then if I have that intention to move towards Krishna, I may be dealing with this black stuff in a particular way. And Krishna knows that. And he has room for it. He has ways and means for that black stuff to slowly or gradually become eliminated. But if I have black stuff, but I'm moving in a direction away from Krishna, but I'm putting on a show, then that show won't last. It'll get, what we say, exposed. So what's necessary is the orientation of our heart. What direction is it oriented in? That's when we're connected to the parampara. It's not because we have black stuff that we're disconnected. The black stuff blocks the flow of mercy. So we may get a drop here and there. But the drop is the genuine thing. Someone else will have less stuff in their heart and it's a nice heavy flow. This is called anartha. And that anartha blocks the flow of descending mercy. When my attention is on the anartha, attention means I'm feeding that anartha or I'm succumbing to that anartha, I block the flow of mercy. And when my attention is on the minute drop of mercy that I'm getting, my anartha moves aside. It's a matter of where I'm oriented. My consciousness, where am I orienting? So we come in front of the deities and say, my dear Krishna, my heart is full of garbage, but I want you. And I don't know how to get there. Help me. That's the direction. Versus, I don't even come to the deities or stand in front, I make a show of it. Or when the moment comes, my attention is all on profit, adoration. That's what I'm dealing with and I'm feeding it. Then even if mercy comes my way, I don't notice it anywhere. I don't hold on to it. I don't notice it. It doesn't exist for me. Until someone comes in and orients us back again. That's the role of the sadhus and gurus, to orient us back. Is that satisfying to you? Jitendra Prabhu, final comment and we'll stop.
Briefly, I remember that phrase, to the degree that one is free from sinful activities, to that degree he can follow Guru and Krishna.
Right.
Also, I heard that we have the 26 qualities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I heard that whatever shortcomings we have towards those 26 qualities, we're still considered somewhat demoniac. Would you agree?
When you said we have 26 qualities
of a devotee,
I was going to say, and we have 26 million bad qualities. But then you said something, and I missed.
Well,
that.
I mean, if you're endowed with the 26 qualities, but you're still a little short to that degree, you're maybe a little somewhat demonic.
You know, one devotee said it very nicely. He said, if you look in Satyayuga, the demon and the devotee, they lived in different planetary systems. The devatas were up there, the asuras were down there. In Treta Yuga, they live in different countries. Lord Ramachandra was in Ayodhya and Ravana was in Lanka. In Dwapar Yuga, they're in the same country but different cities. Indraprastha and Hastinapur. Duryodhan was here and Yudhishthira. I said in Kali Yuga, they're in the same heart. The both are there. Not in different continents or countries or cities. They're in the same heart. And that's the struggle. There's a devotee side that struggles with the devotee side. And usually the picture is that the non-devotee, the demon side is the Goliath. And the devotee is perhaps like a baby David or something. Really small.
In different yugas, let's say a person's thinking of sinful activities, he's guilty. But in Kali Yuga, even if you're thinking of sinful activities but you're not performing, you're not guilty.
Thank God.
Thank you.
Because for all the thoughts we had, we'd be in very bad places. So the concession in Kali Yuga is think as much as you want, don't do it.
We're thinking, feeling, and willing, but you know,
exactly.
To act on that is when you cross the line.
That is correct. So we're not encouraging thinking, but thinking is still you know, safe side. Once the thinking moves into action, which eventually it will, until then we're safe. After that, it's down the cliff.
Well, we try to nip it in the bud.
That would be nice.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Isn't that an Ishtagoshtha?